the Holy Gospel according to Mark. Glory to you, O Lord. King Herod heard of the disciples preaching for Jesus' name had become known. Some were saying, John the Baptizer has been raised from the dead, and for this reason these powers are at work in him. But others said, it is Elijah. And others said, it is a prophet, like one of the prophets of old. But when Herod heard of it, he said, John, whom I beheaded, has been raised. For Herod himself had sent men who arrested John, bound him, and put him in prison on account of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, because Herod had married her. For John had been telling Herod, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. And Herodias had a grudge against him and wanted to kill him. But she could not, for Herod feared John, knowing that he was a righteous and holy man, and he protected him. When he heard him, he was greatly perplexed, and yet he liked to listen to him. But an opportunity came when Herod, on his birthday, gave a banquet for his courtiers and officers and all of the leaders of Galilee. When his daughter Herodias came in and danced, she pleased Herod and his guests, and the king said to the girl, ask me for whatever you wish, and I will give it. And he solemnly swore to her, whatever you ask me, I will give you, even half my kingdom. She went out and said to her mother, what should I ask for? She replied, the head of John the Baptizer. Immediately she rushed back to the king and requested, I want you to give me at once the head of John the Baptizer on a platter. The king was deeply grieved. Yet out of regard for his oath and for the guests, he did not want to refuse her. Immediately, the king sent a soldier of the guard with orders to bring John's head. He went and beheaded him in prison, brought his head on a platter, and gave it to the girl. Then the girl gave it to her mother. When his disciples heard about it, they came and took his body and laid it in a tomb. The Gospel of the Lord. Now, that is quite a story, yes? Yes? It is full of everything that makes millions of dollars in movie theaters these days. Dynamic and surprising characters, big fancy parties for the rich and powerful, gaudy displays of lust and greed, deeply held grudges, revenge, and of course, gruesome violence. So just out of curiosity, how many of you have heard this story before? And how many of you remembered or knew that it was a story that we read as a part of our lectionary cycle, one that we bring into this sacred worship space on Sunday mornings? Did anyone remember that? See Roger Domian raising his hand. He's a pastor. He doesn't count. Right? It's crazy. I imagine you, like me, were wondering, why in the world would we bring this story into this space? If we claim in our Lutheran tradition that our gospel lessons are meant to share with us the liberating good news of God's unearned love and grace for each and every one of us, if they're meant to provide us with hope and healing, what in the world is the purpose of such a terrible and gruesome story? Where is the hope and the healing in such a tragic event where grudges win the day? I think there are actually a few ways in which we can see God's promises alive in this reading. First, in the fact that the story is being told at all. It's being told because Jesus' mission has become so well known out through the countryside and even in the halls of power that there's confusion about who he exactly is. Is he a prophet? Is he Elijah? Is he John the Baptist resurrected? The fact that Jesus' message was making waves in this way is a testament to its power. You could also hear the good news in the disciples of John the Baptist who were faithful to him even until the very end. Or perhaps the good news is in the parallels this story highlights between John the Baptist and Jesus' common message and therefore common fate. However, I want to suggest that today the good news comes to us in a roundabout way through Herod. This past spring, four of us here at Christ the King, myself and three lay leaders, joined a cohort of congregations in a multi-year experience of learning and experimenting with the question of what it means to live the good life as followers of Jesus in a secular age that we are living in here in the United States. Sponsored by Luther Seminary, this program is based off of some hunches and conclusions that scholar Andy Root has come to through his research and talks about in his book called Congregations in a Secular Age. What we mean by secular in this project isn't simply not sacred, like this sanctuary is a sacred space and the Mall of America is a secular space. And it's also not about people who claim to be Christians as opposed to people who claim to be secular. In this project, when we talk about living in a secular age, we're talking about the frame of mind in which we all walk around the world and organize ourselves as a people. Is God at the forefront of our minds, or is God an afterthought? When we're making major decisions about our communal or individual lives, and by we, I mean our city councilors and state and federal officials, I mean the boards of faith-rooted and non-faith-rooted nonprofits. I mean businesses. I mean you and me as individual people. I mean us as a congregation. So when we are making major decisions, is God and our God's desires and longings for the world at the center of those decisions or something that isn't even considered? Believe it or not, there once was a time in which everyone did walk around the world with God at the forefront of their minds. Think of Martin Luther's time, for example. As you are well aware, we are no longer in that place. And I want to be clear that I'm not trying to suggest, nor is the program that we're participating in, that there's a value judgment to be placed on the reality of our secular age. The realities of the secular orientation of our world here in the United States is not inherently a good thing or a bad thing. It simply is. And recognizing this reality simply allows us, as people of faith, to ask different questions about what it means to be a faithful person today. And it causes us to encounter different joys and challenges in practicing our faith in daily life and telling our faith story outside the context of our church homes. So the hope in studying this and thinking about this and experimenting with it together is that we practice doing those things and think together about what it means to share our faith story and practice our faith in this time and place. What does it mean to be a person of faith living in a time when it is possible and common to make meaning of what it means to live a good life without the need for God? When it is common, even for people who claim to believe in God like you and like me, to orient our lives around the ideas of consumption or prestige or profit margins or individual rights and ownership, rather than God's desires and longings for the world, like the care for all people and all creation. From what I understand and know about Herod Antipas, who was the son of Herod the Great, the character who we hear about in the story of Jesus' birth, is that he is someone who claimed to be Jewish, the religion that Jesus and John the Baptist and all the disciples practiced and proclaimed. And yet he didn't really live it out at the center of his being. His Jewish faith was something he professed and something that he proclaimed in order to be liked and to have status, but not something that he kept at the forefront of his mind as he walked through his life or made decisions as a ruler. You might say, Herod, although he lived in a very different world than the one we live in now, was oriented toward what we now call secular. However, in today's gospel story, we learn that even Herod, selfish, prideful, greedy, power-hungry, egocentric Herod, was deeply moved by John the Baptist. He was protecting him in prison because he was perplexed and curious and intrigued by what he had to say, and he liked to listen to him. I think he liked his message of unearned love and grace and forgiveness. And it seems as if Herod knew deep in his being that there really was more to life than his power and his pride and his wealth, that he had a longing for something more from life, something that John spoke to and made alive in him. And yet, when it came down to it, the lure of his pride or saving face or fulfilling whatever the oppressive empire of Rome required of him was more important to him than the liberating story that John and later Jesus proclaimed. Minister Debbie Thomas writes the following in her commentary on this gospel story. She says, maybe Herod has something to teach us by way of negative example. Maybe his is the story of what happens when we treat the incarnate truth too casually, too neutrally. When we approach Jesus with curiosity, perplexity, and maybe even fascination, but then get stuck, never crossing over from spectatorship to discipleship. After all, Jesus doesn't want audience members. He wants followers. So I want to give you a moment to be completely honest with yourself. Do you not see a little bit of Herod in yourself? I do. Do you not sometimes also fall into the traps of professing your faith but not really living it? Do you not find it tempting at times to also measure your success by how much money you make or have accumulated throughout your life, or rather than how you're using your God-given talents for the sake of proclaiming God's liberating love through things like ending poverty and violence and the systems of oppression that perpetuate them? Do you not get tired of trying to have to do that all the time? Do you not find yourself busy with thoughts of how you can show your neighbor that you're doing well and that you have it all together, rather than how you're daily wrestling to accept this wonderful gift of God's grace? Are you also not tempted to measure our success? Are we, as a church community, are we not tempted to measure our success as a church community on the number of people who attend our worship services or Sunday school programs, rather than the way we use our collective voice to practice our faith out in the world by prophetically and boldly proclaiming God's love, no matter what the risk is? The allure of spectatorship, of fascination, without really crossing over into the dangerous territory of discipleship, is powerful, especially while we're living in a secular age. And yet here you are, on a beautiful weekend in July, deciding to come to worship or to tune in online from home because that same longing or deeper knowing that lived in Herod pulls on you too. The good news for us today is that the longing that lives in you is a gift from God. It is a gift that God, through Christ, lavishly bestows upon the whole world, apparently even Herod. That knowing is the gift of God's unearned love and grace that has been given to you, that you cannot do anything to get rid of, that is always and forever there. How we decide to respond to that gift is how we can be different than Herod. Responding to that gift by keeping it at the forefront of our minds to guide us across that bridge from spectatorship to discipleship is something that we get to do day by day and really, honestly, moment by moment. We sometimes talk about it here in the Lutheran Church as remembering our baptism every day, or something that we do as we receive the gift of God's love and grace through bread and wine around the Holy Communion table. In our secular age, responding to God's love and grace in every single moment is a spiritual practice. It's a part of the journey. It's not a given. It takes work. It's not something that we can slack off with. Even in the moments when we do give in to the allure of our pride or our ego like Herod does, we still have the opportunity to then, in the next moment, to tune our hearts towards God. God has given you everything you need. Through Christ, God's love claims and calls and walks with you across that bridge. And I pray that we all may be bold enough to go day by day and moment by moment. Amen.